Welcome to Entrepreneur's Playbook. This is David Meltzer, and I'm here with Kwame Christian. He is the CEO of the American Negotiation Institute, but most importantly, he's a Buckeye. That means this is here in Columbus, Ohio, the home of the Ohio State Buckeyes, O-H-I-O. Let's get right to it. Thank you for joining me, Kwame.
Hey, man. Thank you for repaying the favor. You were on my show. I really appreciate it.
So I'm blessed to be on your show. I'm always blessed to share with the community, and our communities have so much in common.
Yes.
The interesting thing about my career is most people, because I ran the most notable sports agency in the world, they think my expertise or subject matter preference is negotiation.
Yeah.
And I have a unique perspective of negotiation, not like Lee Steinberg, who's known for that type of negotiation. In your opinion, being the expert in the space, right, in the American Negotiation Institute, what role does negotiation play today? And are there certain aspects that you believe are missing from negotiation?
Yeah, for sure. So negotiation is everywhere. So I think it's good to start with the definition.
Please.
Because a lot of times we just focus on negotiation as this really like backroom deal type of really intense interaction.
Yeah. Competitive.
Very competitive and very transactional.
Right.
But I like to redefine negotiation. So the way I think about it is a negotiation is anytime you're in a conversation and somebody wants something. So when
almost
you think
every
about
conversation.
Every conversation.
Of humans.
Every conversation, right?
Right, right.
And so it broadens our perspective because one of the biggest mistakes people make is that they don't recognize when they're negotiating. And when they don't recognize they're negotiating, then they don't have that signal to use the skills that we're going to talk about today.
Do you believe in a negotiation, part of the problem is people don't know what they want?
Yes, because the first negotiation we have to have is with ourselves. Because one of the worst outcomes you can have in a negotiation is going in there with a good strategy, great tactics, and getting exactly what you wanted, and then realizing it's the worst thing for you.
It's interesting you say that because I know just in these conversations, as you call them, that a lot of people haven't taken the time to know their timing and risk tolerance.
Right.
Number one, how important is it to know your timing and risk tolerance in these type of conversations, which we define as negotiation?
It's crucial because when you think about timing is everything. I mean, the amount of power and leverage can shift based on timing alone. Risk tolerance too, it's not just yours, but also your team, your family. They're on board with you through this process too. And so the more propensity you have for risk, the more willing you are to take bigger swings. But at the same time, the more likely you are to have a bigger failure too. So you have to consider what risk you're willing to take, what is an acceptable failure in these negotiations. Because if you strategize the right way, even if you don't get exactly what you want, you can still advance your position. It's kind of like chess.
And within the context of negotiation being a conversation where you want something, one of the things that comes to my mind is the importance of perceived value, which let me define that for you, because everyone may have a different variance of perceived value. So for me, perceived value is based upon your comfort and your confidence in articulating that value. Because it's perceived. This is why I make so much speaking. Because I'm very comfortable and confident saying I'm a six-figure speaker. And I know that the only difference between when I was making 25 or 50 grand speaking and now today is I'm just more comfortable and confident in articulating the value of why you would want me to be the keynote speaker at your annual meeting or global event. How do you see perceived value? And is that definition a fair one within the context of the conversation?
Absolutely. I mean, it comes down to the difference between convincing and conveying. In these conversations, if you're sitting there trying to convince, then really you've given away your power to the other side. It's like they have the keys to your validation and you're begging for that. But when you're conveying that with your aura, your presence, your confidence, you don't need to convince them of anything. You're just saying, this is the value. Let's see if there's a match. If not, that's fine. And people can sense that difference. And that's what actually draws people to you.
Also, one of the variables that a lot of people leave out or haven't predetermined in a disposition. So there's a predisposition of a conversation where you want something. One of the crucial predispositions in a conversation where you want something is knowing your bottom line.
Yes.
Now, a lot of people call it the walk away close.
Right.
Or the ringing towel theory. Right? These are the old school type of negotiation trainings that they would give in the old Zig Ziglar days.
And
look, but the truth is that you need to know if it's worth it to you or not.
Yes.
Is there some things that you teach at the Institute or your experience about knowing how to determine our bottom line?
Yeah, I think it goes back to the self-negotiation because there's a difference between knowing your bottom line and committing to it because deal makers bias
is
real.
Bombs, brother. Right? Thank so you. Good. Yeah.
Because the thing is, sometimes you know, you believe so strongly in your negotiation skills that you say, no, I can get this done. Whatever it takes, I can get this done. I'm good enough. Now it's not about the outcome, like the better outcome for you and your team or your family. Now it's just about you proving yourself to yourself. It's all about ego. So you might have that bottom line in mind, but you might be willing to steer beyond it in order to get the deal done because you've fallen in love with the idea of the deal, not the idea of a good deal.
Right. It's almost like being in love with your product.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Not actually knowing you have a business.
Yeah.
The American Negotiation Institute.
Yes.
I'm the chairman of the Napoleon Hill Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And when we are trying to scale the ideas, philosophies, theories, practices, procedures, and frameworks that are required to have an institutionalized view or perspective, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. What's
yes.
the structure of the Institute? How are you helping people?
Yeah, so we have two major sides of the business. So we have the training, consulting, and keynotes. That's the side that is very visible. But then we also have the media side. And so that's the side that I think is most scalable. That's what I'm most excited about. So we have the podcast. It was the number one negotiation podcast in the world because we have great minds.
To be on it.
Yes, like Dave on the show. And so we've got over 1,700 episodes, over 16 million downloads.
Yeah.
We've got courses as well, over 48 courses with LinkedIn Learning. Oh, 2.3 million people have gone through our online courses. We have a partnership with LinkedIn to create the negotiation certificate.
That's
so
awesome.
Anybody around the world who gets certified in negotiation, it has the stamp of approval from the American Negotiation Institute.
We should merge the Napoleon Hill and his philosophies with
yeah,
the American
I would love that.
And have a certificate, co-certificate.
I would love
of
that.
Napoleon Hill because he teaches, you know, literally so many of the same concepts
yes.
in his way. And Think and Grow Rich, Outwitting the Devil, lending our brand to
mm-hmm.
the Institute and joining, you know, our huge audience. Now,
that would be
one
great.
Of the things that's so remarkable about you as a person, Kwame, is that, you know, I've been around the block. I'm a lot older than you. I've made and lost a lot more money than you.
Right.
I've been in a lot more negotiations. I was in the business, as you know, the most notable sports agency in the world. I've seen it all. And every time I speak with you, whether I'm on your podcast or you're in this one, I'm blown away by the situational knowledge that you have.
Thank you.
And that doesn't come easily. That means that you are constantly getting feedback from your failures. You are being very intentional about your learning
yeah.
To understand that the depths and the subtleties of your answers that a lot of people may not be aware of right now, but okay. they really resonate with me.
Thank you.
And I was curious if you could let me know more of your background
yeah.
of, you know, where this wisdom came from at such a young age when it comes to understanding conversations where people want something.
Yeah, so it started out off actually because I was profoundly bad at this, Dave.
Really?
Yeah, so I used to be a people pleaser, and that's
yeah,
what
that's
got
bad
me into
for
this.
Negotiation.
Very bad, right? And so I remember I was in.
Can you train Nick? He's one of the biggest people. The Nick of Wams.
Listen,
here
we
watching,
can work. Bro. We can work together, bro. Yeah, man. And so one of my mentors told me he's like, there's a difference between being liked and being respected, and you have big dreams, but you won't accomplish them if you can't have these tough conversations.
Yeah.
So I studied psychology in undergrad, and I treated my fear of conversation. The tough conversations like a phobia. So I created my own framework to overcome that. Then when I went to law school, I stumbled into a negotiation class by accident.
Yeah.
That's when I learned it was a skill, not a talent. So I became obsessed with it because
yeah.
every time I was able to stand up for myself and have these tough conversations, it was a vote of confidence for the man I want to become. So we had these negotiation competitions and my partner and I won the competition at the law school. We got to represent the school at the American Bar Association competition in Ottawa, Ontario,
yep.
and we won that too. So I'm like,
I've been a judge in those competitions.
Oh, for real? Okay,
yeah.
So you know.
They just got invited to be the one at Tulane for the negotiation.
That's
me
great.
And Mike Tannenbaum.
That's great.
Lee's
yeah.
been too, Lee Steinberg.
That's amazing. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
And so I said to myself, there are other people in the world who are struggling like me. How can I help them? And there wasn't anything that I had access to just join. So I started practicing law. I started mediation. And then I said, you know what? I need to build this thing. And that's how I started the American Negotiation Institute.
And through that now, the growth has been exponential.
Yes.
And it is a skill. Most people don't realize, though, it's a skill for everyone. Right. And yes. So tell me about a little bit of your community. Is it just lawyers? No. Is it, tell me who, do you have any moms trying to get their kids to eat broccoli?
Yes, yes, man. I, what's been funniest is that, especially on Instagram, I've turned into a parenting influencer in many cases.
Because my biggest videos are about parenting, by the way. I've one that's over like 45 million views, and it's about my daughter's car being missing at 4 a.m.
Wow. Yeah. That's a good hook to start off a video, right?
But people loved it.
Yeah. And that's the thing. When you touch people's hearts and you connect it with something that they actually care about, then everybody can resonate with the content. You know, so we have these big companies, Google, Apple, NASA, Microsoft, Intel, all of these big companies that work with the American Negotiation Institute. But the thing that warms my heart the most is when I go to a conference and somebody says, Kwame, I've been listening to the podcast. I've closed more deals. But the thing that helps me the most is the relationship with my 16-year-old son. That's what I'm in it for, man.
I love that. So I have a new book coming out at Super Bowl. I started pre-orders at the beginning of the football season, ending at Radio Row with SiriusXM at Super Bowl. And it came from the advice, the best negotiation advice that Lee Steinberg, Jerry Maguire, gave.
Yeah.
And I was negotiating a $900 million purchase of the Los Angeles Rams from Georgia Frontieri. John Shaw was the president. Lincoln Financial was in the deal. Lee himself was in rehab at the time, and it was my first week.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I called Lee, and I said, hey, I'm a little bit above my skis, and I just want to let you know I'll do this, but I need some advice. I go, I've never negotiated a $900 million deal before. And he said, Dave, it's quite simple. Always be fair. Don't negotiate to the last penny. And don't do business with dicks. And that's the name of my book. Don't do business with dicks.
Brilliant.
In the Institute's philosophy and your experience, would you mind giving your advice on those three pieces of negotiation skills of always being fair, not negotiating to the last penny, and what that means to you?
Yeah.
And of course, how important is it not to do business with dicks?
For me, when I think about every negotiation as it relates to fairness, I recognize that rumors will travel. Your reputation travels.
Especially today.
Yes, right? Every email.
One post.
One post, you're done, right? Yeah. So I say, listen, my thing is, I'm negotiating with this individual, but I'm also negotiating every future negotiation as well.
Mm.
And so I recognize that there's some maybe dark negotiation techniques that I could use to bully the deal across the table.
Yeah.
But I know that it's short-term thinking because a win now means multiple, infinite losses in the future because of the toll it takes on my reputation. And so I'd rather lose a deal if it costs my reputation, right? So the fairness is important. When it comes to don't negotiate down to the last penny, my thing is you have to give yourself some margin, and then you also have to believe in the power of you as a professional, but also the power of your company too. Because if you get in the habit of negotiating down to the last penny, then that might be an indication of a mindset issue where you don't feel like you're worthy enough to advocate for more.
What about the other side, negotiating down to squeezing them out of their last penny?
Well, man, it depends. Typically, the thing is, here's the way I think about it.
Yeah.
If I'm dealing with a solo shop, like a smaller business, then I know the last penny is more significant for them. That could be existential. At the end of the day, when I'm working with these multi-billion dollar companies, I feel less compassion. Yeah.
You make a really good point, and that just shows more of these subtleties of success and situational knowledge, is because when I ask the question, it is circumstantial.
Exactly.
Right? Like I think it's really important, and I see it, you know, like take basic sales, like cars or appliances or something like that, the old school, and car sales is still there. I'm okay with a guy trying to squeeze me when he's selling me.
Yeah.
Right? I'm capable, I'm wealthy.
Right.
But when it becomes usury, right, the person may not be as educated, as savvy, or have as much money.
Mm-hmm.
And do you believe that in the context of negotiation, that there is morality, that there can be kindness and abundance of I would see myself, if a guy like me walked in and I was selling cars, I'd go at him.
Right.
Because he's prepared,
exactly.
But if I had a single mom with six kids come in, like, I would give her the best deal. I go right to the bottom line of my best deal and say, oh, I can give you this, let me add in this. You know, they're going to tell you to do the undercar protection
100%.
When you go into the service. I would do that.
Yes.
Do you think that is part of negotiation?
100%. I mean, for me, it's about spreading the wealth as much as possible, but helping people. It's hard to identify and articulate a specific metric for it, but it's the good feeling. Here's the thing, Dave, when I negotiate, I pretend that my mother, my father, my grandparents, all of them are looking at me at the table, and I ask myself, would they be proud of the way that I handled myself? You know? And for me, if I can help somebody who is in need, then that is the ultimate value, not just for me, not just for them, but for society as a whole. You know? So I think it's really important to consider your blessings, count your blessings, recognize that you're in a place of privilege in a lot of these positions. And then if you have the ability to help somebody from that position, then you should do that, right? But then if it's a really toe-to-toe negotiation with somebody at the same level of power, then the way that I think about it is that they are advocating for themselves and they are doing exactly what they should be doing when they are pushing me really hard. But if they cross the line and they do something kind of dirty or backhanded,
shady,
then this is how I think about it, Dave. Well, first of all, I don't want to do business with them.
Yeah.
And if I'm stuck in a contract, I'll get out. I'm a lawyer, right? I'll get out. And I consider it a public policy issue. And here's what I mean. Because if you can look at me and my status, my privilege, my accomplishment, and think you can take advantage of me, then that tells me that when you see somebody at a lower status than me, you are definitely taking advantage of them.
For sure.
So in my mind, it's a public policy issue. So I need to make sure that you feel a little bit of pain in this instant to make sure not just you don't take advantage of me, but you know you can't take advantage of other people.
And that's why it's so important not to do business with dicks.
Exactly. Exactly.
That is so good. Now, I believe that the greatest negotiators have passion, purpose, and profitability in mind.
Yes.
And you've been in more negotiations, maybe even than I have, being the CEO of the National Negotiation Institute. Can you share with me one of your favorite stories that illustrates, could be competition,
yes,
could be a real one,
yeah,
no names are necessary,
no names,
but something, a negotiation that illustrated that passion, the purpose, and the profitability?
Okay, I got a good one for you.
Okay.
So this was the biggest deal in the history of the American Negotiation Institute, and we were just coming out of COVID, so even though we had a great brand, it was existential when it came to profitability. Like, it was significant. And so we were in this media deal, and we performed really well, and we said, okay, hey, listen, if we perform to this level, could we guarantee a deal of this level when it comes to renewal? And they said, yeah. So I got it down in writing, and they confirmed. And so I invested tens of thousands of dollars into marketing to blow it out of the water. And we outperformed what our metrics were supposed to be. And then when we got the renewal, they gave us an offer that was actually less than the initial contract.
Oh, wow.
And so I said, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? Because for me, I am an empathetic, compassionate type of negotiator, but this was shady. And so I said, okay, what am I going to do? But I remember I had on the podcast Ryan Serhant, who was the real estate mogul.
A good friend of mine. Ryan, yes, Serhant had my favorite line. He goes, nobody wants to be sold. You go shopping with your friends.
Oh,
and that's where he earned
that.
That's where he earned my respect. I was like, this is like a Bravo guy. I don't want to interview him.
Right.
And then he was a better sales guy than I was. I'm like,
brilliant.
Shit, this guy's brilliant.
He's brilliant.
Yeah.
He
should have starred in the Barbie movie, by the way.
I know.
He looks like Ken.
He really does.
Yeah.
He really does.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I was chatting with him, he said, in the New York real estate market, it's the toughest market in the world. And in that market, we have a saying, silence is violence. If a deal isn't good enough, we just say no. We just ignore it completely.
Yeah.
And so I said, okay, that's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to respond. This is on a Wednesday. But as I don't respond, I'm going to figure out what my other options were. And I realized that they already sold the ads on our show, assuming that we would say yes. So I realized we had the leverage, right?
Yeah.
And so I said, okay, it's Wednesday. I'm not going to respond Thursday. Not going to respond Friday. I bet they email me on Friday saying, bumping this to the top of the inbox. They do it. I still don't respond because I don't want them thinking about anything but me over the weekend.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
obsessing.
So what I said, I responded on Monday and I said, hey, listen, I received your offer and I just want to make sure I'm understanding. Is this the entirety of your offer that you mean for the American Negotiation Institute? And so I'm using the old 80s Wendy's commercial. Where's the beef? I'm this can't be all of it, man. So where's the rest? They said, hey, this is everything, but if you want to negotiate, let's do it. And so I respond with a video. And I say, hey, listen, I want to be really transparent. I received your offer and I was disappointed. And then I paused. I said, no, I wasn't disappointed. I was hurt. Because I think we established a really good trusting relationship. And now you've taken advantage of me because you told me that the deal was going to be up here and now it's down here. So frankly, I don't feel comfortable negotiating with you at this time because I no longer feel safe in this business relationship.
Wow.
So our next step isn't going to be a negotiation. You get your media team, I'll get my productions crew together, and we will unwind this relationship. And they... No, this is where they panicked. So what happened is they responded with a video. Dave, it looked like a hostage video. They looked terrified. They're like, please come back. And so I came back, negotiated again. And this was one of the biggest things that I said in the video, because I still am a relationship guy. I wanted to make sure that the relationship was still good.
Yeah.
And so I said, now I want to pause for a moment and say, hey, listen. And I said their names. Let's say John and Mike, between for us, we're still good. We still have a good relationship, because here's what I choose to believe. I choose to believe that there are more powerful people within your organization that are making you do something that you do not want to do. So this is not personal, but for me as the CEO of the American Negotiation Institute, I have to do what's best for my company.
Yeah.
So when we got back to the negotiation table, even though it was a very aggressive move on my part, I could still have a really strong relationship at the table.
Right.
And we were able to increase that deal 177% by the end of the week.
That's good negotiations. If you want to learn how to negotiate in a conversation where people want something, the definition of negotiation, know your timing and risk tolerance, your perceived value, your bottom line, learn from the best, the CEO, Kwame Christian, here with me at the American Negotiation Institute. Thanks for joining
me. Thank you,
Dave. Appreciate
on
the playbook.
Brother. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
David Meltzer, live in Columbus, Ohio, at the Aspire Business Tour, the number one business tour in the world, here with Entrepreneurs, the playbook.